Hey, it's Jody Hamilton.
And Sean Smith-Pierce.
Here's a taste of what you might have missed from the Politics Bar.
Jody, I was listening to you this morning, filling in for Steph. You and Chris were debating, and just for the record, Jody is right. Chris's argument is that there is some truth to what's being said about the left being in their own information silo. Right.
Basically, we started talking about how Gavin Newsom has invited people on his podcast, High Up MAGA Guys.
Yeah. Well-known right-wing propagandists. That's what they are. Yeah.
And my argument is he shouldn't be inviting them because nobody on that side is listening to Gavin Newsom.
Right. It doesn't help to bring propagandists into a sphere where truth matters because they're just going to lie their asses off anyway.
Right.
So here is a public service message for Chris Lavoie. Jody Hamilton is right. Catch all that and more weeknights at the Politics Bar. Available through your favorite progressive radio station, your favorite podcast player, or online anytime at thepoliticsbar.com.
Tired of sugar-coated news and corporate spin? Check out The Nicole Sandler Show. Speaking truth to power with the irreverence it deserves. Smart, fearless, and just the right amount of snark. Nicole breaks down the headlines, exposes the hypocrisy, and talks with the people working for real change. Weekdays at 3 Eastern, noon Pacific on Progressive Voices, NicoleSandler.com, Substack, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. Don't just get the news, get the truth.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Welcome to the Start Me Up podcast, part of MSW Media and the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. I'm your host, Kimberly Johnson in D.C. Today, my returning guest is Brian Karam. He's a White House columnist. He writes for Salon. He's the author of Free the Press, The Death of American Journalism and How to Revive It. And he's also the host of the podcast, Just Ask the Question. I always love talking to Brian, but before we get into it, the Start Me Up podcast is independent, listener funded, and woman run. Visit patreon.com/startmeup to see the variety of tiers offered, including the option to get a bonus What's Up episode just for patrons every Tuesday. It's kind of like my online journal where I get a little more personal and I talk about whatever's on my mind. There's also an ad-free tier with a much shorter intro. Just visit patreon.com/startmeup. Now, please enjoy my conversation with Brian Karam. Welcome back to the show, Brian.
Well, thank you for having me.
I'm looking at you. Like, Brian can't see me because I look ridiculous today, plus my computer doesn't have a camera. But I can look at Brian and he just looks wonderful. So I'm so happy to talk to you. And I just have to tell you, there are a few people that I like to refer to as my easy as Sunday morning guests, and now you're one of them.
Oh,
Greg Oliar is one, Jody Hamilton is one, but you're so easy. You're just an easy guest, and you're like my comfort food
like
guest.
Like a Sunday morning, yeah.
Now, before we get into all the scary crap, I want to talk about, okay, so earlier this year, was it this year? Yeah, I think it was this right before he became president again. We had the Sexy Liberal tour, this comedy tour, and I finally got to meet you in person. We finally got to meet. And that was really fun. But the thing is, okay, so I was freaking out, right? I was completely freaked out from like the day after voting day until it took me until about Thanksgiving. I had a knot in my stomach and I was terrified. There was all this crap going on in my personal life. But beside that, I was just terrified for democracy and obviously for good reason. And I didn't want to have you on because it scared me to have you on. I felt like, oh no, not because of you, but just because I felt like you had this close proximity to the White House and I was just afraid, you know, I was just terrified. Like, what if this puts me in a higher view of the regime and something happens to me, you know, all that stuff. So obviously I don't have that fear right now because you're sitting here talking to me.
Why, thank you, man.
But I just, you know, like I said, before we get into all of this, first of all, it was nice meeting you, but like, how has your life been? What's different now. That obviously there was the first term, and now there's this. And what's different? What do you see that's different?
Donald Trump's functionally illiterate and totally insane this time around. Not that that changed much, but right. I think if you want to say that Joe Biden slid into senility, I'm going to say that Donald Trump took the plunge. he's nowhere near. He's not as sharp as he was the first time around, but he has surrounded himself with a bunch of yes men. I mean, in the first administration, there were people in the administration who would keep him from getting stuff put on his desk so he wouldn't, you know, sign it. This group, a bunch of morons and fascists and slaves to racism, are very happy to put the paperwork in front of Don to sign, and they don't care whether it violates, you know, the Constitution or not. They want total control. So they put it on Donald's desk. He signs it. He comes out. He's the front man for it. But make no mistake, he's not running the show anymore. It's the extremists.
And
it's the ones that are even extreme of the extremists. So, you know, Stephen Miller and Susan Wiles and morons like that are actually the ones holding Donald's leash this time around. And it is frightening in its scope.
Yeah, it really is. And so now have you been back to the White House? How often, and what's changed in the White House press room?
I have, not often, and what has changed more than anything else is the fact that there are very few reporters left. Mm-hmm. If you go back to what Donald did at the beginning of his second administration was take control of assigning the seats in the pool, Donald Trump has not made himself available. He's been in the Brady briefing room three times, maybe, since he's been back. He doesn't do his chopper talk like he used to. Whenever he left, he would stop by and do 10-15 minutes with the open press, and it was in those two places where I could get the best shot at Donald, and Donald doesn't want that. He doesn't want anybody like me around asking questions. He's afraid of it. So he has stacked the press pool, and that's why you see sycophants and morons asking him questions like, how come you're so great you shoot rainbows out of your butt? You know, that's the depth of their questioning of Donald Trump. Or you get the moron that's Marjorie Taylor Greene's boyfriend making fun of Zelensky not wearing a suit. And boy, was that beautiful watching Zelensky put him in his place. He showed back up. You've changed your suit. Yes, and I see you haven't changed yours. Beautiful. Comic timing. Couldn't ask for anything better. And the moron just smut because he just is there for the attention. And if you're not there to do the job, you shouldn't be allowed in there. But the fact is that those of the greatest depth and those with the most experience are not allowed in that room. He tried to ban the AP when he couldn't do that. He just took all of the wire services off the pool list. So those are the people with the most experience and the greatest depth. So people like Steve Holland and Jeff Mason from Reuters, the AP reporters, aren't in the pool anymore. And you have the new media seats filled by, I can't even describe who, I've never even heard of some of these organizations. Yeah. And, you know, I'm pretty well informed. I'm obviously not well informed enough with the people who have 37 people watching them on their YouTube channel. But apparently that's, you know, who they're letting in the White House these days, as long as they're sycophants and will cheer Donald Trump's every word. And it's destroying. He has, in effect, destroyed the free press and independent media by paying attention to protecting and promoting the most vociferous of election deniers and conspiracy theorists. There are people in that briefing room now that believe that their vapor trails are real, man never landed on the moon, the Holocaust didn't happen, and we all live on a flat earth.
Yeah.
So it's tough to the one question I keep asking the conspiracy theorists, you believe that we live on a flat earth? Absolutely. So what happens when those jets that are putting out the vapor trails, do they fly off the edge of the earth? How does that work?
I mean, how can you can't reason with that. You just can't. It's impossible.
No, you can't reason with stupidity and insanity. No. That's why Donald Trump's second administration is so difficult to cover, because it doesn't matter. There is no single fact other than his date of birth and I'll even question that one, that is not, no fact that's not, you know, indisputable. Everything you look up on Donald Trump is in dispute, and that plays to him. That's what he wants. He's able to flood the zone with garbage and BS because there are no established facts or things of the past.
So what what determines how you get to the White House? Do you have to be invited to the press room?
Well, how it used to work is you were vetted by the Secret Service. I have a congressional press pass. You apply for the hard pass with the White House until you are vetted by the Secret Service. You have a date. You can get a day pass as long as you're these days, even disreputable, but usually from a reputable news source. You would call ahead a day before, you'd fill out the form with your social security number, blah, 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 blah. You'd show up, they'd check you in, they'd give you a little card that says an escort, so they'd escort you to the White House briefing room, and then you'd have free rein on the campus wherever the free press could go, but not where, since you're not in the pool, that limited your ability to, you know, wherever open press events were allowed, usually the Brady briefing room, sometimes the South Lawn, the North Lawn, the Rose Garden, but you're not going to be in the diplomatic room. You're not going to be in the Oval Office. Those are restricted to pool only, and he's restricted the pool to only fans of his. So it's another level of vetting that they have put in place to make sure that he's not asked difficult questions.
Well, that's not surprising.
No.
Okay, now I want to get into the whole Gavin Newsom and what Democrats need to do. But before I get into that, I just want to ask.
Wait a minute. You had you were going to tell a story about sexually liberal comedy.
Well, no, I think the story was that I was afraid to have you on. But I mean, okay. We can go back to that and we can talk about how much fun it was. And
Oh, you had a question. Go ahead. I didn't mean it.
That's okay. I was just going to say something that I shouldn't say, so I'm not going to say it. Okay. It was just a story you told us that you didn't. You told Bob and me a story about somebody, and I can't. You wouldn't tell us who it was. Do you remember that? See, the listeners are going, oh my God, Kimberly, shut the fuck up. What are you talking about? But
That's the story.
Anyway, never mind. Okay. So I'm just going all over the map here.
Well, when we're off camera.
Okay. So here's the deal. I don't know what you're going to think of this, and this is why I'm asking. And maybe you don't even think this is important, but I'm sure you heard the other day on Fox and Friends, Donald Trump was worried about getting into heaven. He said that he heard he wasn't doing well and that he was low on the – wasn't doing well and he was low on the totem pole, and meaning his chances of getting into heaven, he wasn't doing well. And there is a line of thought that this is like the faith leaders or whatever telling him, Donald, you have to – do better. But, you know, there's the conspiracy theory in my own brain that's saying that sometimes when people are, you know, getting older and they know, you know, that dirt nap's approaching, it's not that I think he feels any guilt or whatever.
The time is near.
Yeah. It's like they start wondering, you know, because it's like we've all had those experiences in life that there's more to meet, more than life. I can't talk more. To life than meets the eye. And, you know, we write them off. We don't know what they are. But then as you're getting older and sick and maybe you're close to death, you start going, I did this and I did that. I wonder, do you think that this is just him being an idiot talking about getting into heaven? Do you think there's something to it? What do you make of it? Because I know there's a lot of people who just think he's an idiot talking.
Well, I always think he's
an idiot. I know.
He is one of the biggest idiots I've ever met, and he loves to talk, hence an idiot talking. Yes. He loves the I think he's just playing people. I don't think he has one care or even thought about life after death other than the fact that he doesn't want to die.
Yes.
And, you know, that's why Dr. Ronny Jackson came out in the first administration and said, hey, he's going to live to be 200. Now, I was looking at the same. And, this was Don's mistake the first time. He put a lot of info out there. He put all charts and graphs and medications. And I'm looking at it, and I'm not a doctor. But my dad had heart disease, and I'm looking at the charts they gave me. The guy standing next to me was a doctor, Dr. Sanjay Gupta. Mm-hmm. And I looked at him. I said, hey, doc. I go, I'm not a doctor, but I'm looking at this. This looks like he's got heart disease. And he goes, oh, yeah, he has heart disease.
Yeah.
Well, That was how long? 7 years ago?
Wow.
7 years ago. So he doesn't get better with time. It's,
right. Exactly.
So, yeah, I'm sure he's facing, as we all do, faces thoughts of mortality. And if he gives them more than a fleeting thought, I don't think he gives anything more than a fleeting thought. So I don't think he's capable of anything more than a fleeting thought. And I think he is mentally declined strategically, dramatically, is not the same person that he was. But this sounds like BS propagated by, you know, those in his inner circle, PEP Secretary Caroline Leavitt, did I say that out loud? Who is trying to put the Christian, so-called Christian, on it. But look, I can't, like I said, there's no facts indisputable with Donald Trump. So I couldn't tell you what the truth is here. I'm sure they can't, because the facts of the matter show us that no matter what issue we're discussing about Donald Trump, there may be four or five competing reasons for the BS that he's shouting at us.
That's true. And I think there is this, you know, universal desire. Every single day you see somebody or more than like more than one person talking about they can't wait until. I'm not going to say it, but you know what I mean. That day arrives.
When he expires?
Yeah. The when it's finally when he's gone and out of the picture. And so, I know that question that every single morning I wake up and whenever I look at the computer, the first thing I do is like, okay, is he still here? You know, because he's very unhealthy. And I mean, he could live to be 90, but we all have, like a lot of us just want it to be over. It doesn't mean if he's gone out of the picture, then we have J.D. Vance and we have all the oligarchs and that's a whole nother
J.D.
thing.
Vance, the couch loving eyeliner lover. Yeah, the only thing worse than Donald Trump would be J.D. I love my sofa Vance, but you can get them on sale down at Big Lots or J.D. Vance shops.
They're the softest.
There, as of today, I believe there are 1,248 days left to go in Donald Trump's administration, and I count every one of them, and I am determined that I will survive him. That's all I can, and you know, that's not guaranteed to any of us, but damn it, I'm determined to outlive this bastard. who knows? Who knows what happens? He could, I had a relative who died at 101 years of age.
Wow.
Everybody kept predicting their demise, and the day they were wrong, and he outlived a lot of people that thought he wouldn't. So.
Right.
Who can?
Yeah, we don't know, but we're all like really hopeful. I mean, everybody.
Well,
I'm
not
I
hopeful
think,
for anybody's demise. I'm hopeful for
democracy.
A democracy. There you go. I'm hopeful for that.
Okay, so this leads me to the next question, and I'm going to have to preface this with a couple of different things. So there's the bigger picture. How do we get democracy back? And we've got big institutions, including so much of the legacy media, just capitulating to Donald Trump, which is very upsetting. John Ossoff said, "Democrats need to strike back. We have no time or luxury for high-minded hesitation because Trump and MAGA are going to do everything within their power to hold on and lock one-party rule in America. That's the reality we face." Allison Gill posted, now this is just something different. This is about the Texas gerrymandering. She said the numbers are in. The new maps Republicans just passed in Texas reduce Hispanic Texans to 1/3 of a white person and Black Texans to 1/5 of a white person. So all of that said, I mean, not that I have to remind anybody how, you know, the danger that we're in, but now all of a sudden, Gavin Newsom, who's not everybody's favorite, but I don't care right now, but he's, you know, he has captured the attention, not just of, you know, the Democratic Party and everybody on social media, but the Republicans are really starting to pay attention to him now, and they really don't like what they're seeing because he's mocking Trump's style of communication. And basically the right is flipping it shit. So I wanted to ask you, like, what do you think of Newsom, of his behavior and the way he's fighting? Do you think this is at least, because I don't expect every Democrat to fight like this, but I mean, what's your take on Newsom's choices right now?
He's made a choice to confront Donald Trump to his face. Now, who am I to object to that? As I have done the same myself.
Yes.
So choosing to do that, I can only support. How he implements his strategy is up to him. I might do it differently, and I would offer criticisms of strategy, but the Democrats are right about one thing. They better find a backbone and a spine and somebody who can stand up to Donnie and the minions that that love him and use him. They don't actually love him. They jettison him in a heartbeat as long as they could hold on to power.
Yeah.
And let's be honest, the Republicans in Congress and some of the Democrats to boot are only there because they are about themselves.
Yes.
That's the bottom line problem with a lot of politics. You got to get the money out of politics. You got to invest in education and make sure that the electorate are better educated than they are now. And you have to support a free press. Those things have to occur in the long run. Lower, you know, take the money out of politics, invest money in education, invest money in an independent media, and then you'll bring back a democracy. But we have, since the time of Ronald Reagan, done the exact opposite. Yeah. The seeds were planted with Richard Nixon, and that stain has not left the executive branch. It has spread. It is a cancer. It was fed by Ronald Reagan, but every other president, including the Democrats, have dismantled the free press and cut into education. And George W. Bush's idea of no child left behind meant every child has been left behind. Mm-hmm. The consolidation of media, the influence of money in the democratic process, and the dismantling of education has destroyed democracy. So whatever means that at this point in time, if you don't recognize that you are in a cultural war, you are going to be consumed by the cultural war. Now, do I favor this battle of gerrymandering? Of course not, because it only leads to a quid pro quo, who can top who. And at the end of the day, I do not want our representatives picking their voters. I want the voters picking the representatives. But we are in a battle now to decide who can pick their voters. And Donald Trump is spearheading this effort. He should be boiled in his own oil, made to sniff his own hairspray, tied up with his own fake hair, and made to sit and watch reruns of The Apprentice for all eternity. But nonetheless, this is where we are. So either you engage in the battle or you don't. And if you don't, you're going to get consumed. Mm-hmm. So to that point, Gavin Newsom is doing something that needs to be done. I mean, Governor Hairdo is you know, they love him because he looks good. And I keep saying, if, you know, they say, well, Pete Buttigieg would be the best president, but he can't get elected because he's gay. And I go, no, that's not it at all. If Pete Buttigieg is too short, people don't elect short people. If Pete Buttigieg looked like Gavin Newsom, he could run for a third term.
Yeah.
So it's all appearance versus reality in American politics, and appearance is winning.
It's true. And I mean, Gavin is not my first choice, but I do appreciate his behavior right now, everything that he's doing, his strategy.
Take it to a man. Stick it to the man. Yeah. You got to stick it to the man.
Yeah. And I want to bring something up because last week I talked to Greg Oliar, who was my original Easy Like Sunday Morning guest. But
he's like a Sunday morning.
I just love Greg. He's researching Nazis, right? The rise of Hitler and all of that. And he said two things that we have to our advantage right now compared to what happened in 1930s Germany is that, number one, we do have some resistance within our government. And then we also have resistance in our population, because there are, every day we're having people protesting and showing up, and whether it's boycotts or one form of resistance or another, Indivisible is a great way for all of you guys out there who are freaking out. Indivisible, it's not just about knocking on doors and getting people elected, it's ways to resist fascism. So there's like an active thing happening out there. And that's positive. So what this leads me to is, after everything you just said about what Newsom is doing, and obviously I know you're not an oracle, but hopeful.
What? How
I often
dare
am
you
told
stop
that.
Me into reality.
When I ask questions, they're like, Kimberly, I'm not an oracle. But you said, you know, your hope is to get democracy. We all want democracy back, and we want Donald Trump out and fascism gone. From what you see right now, in this moment in time, how hopeful are you that we can do this?
I'd be much more hopeful if rock and roll was more popular. And I say that as a joke, but I'm half serious about that. The attitudes that were prevalent in the 60s.
Yes.
I remember, you know, I'm old enough, not really. Okay, I am. I'm old enough to remember 1968 and the Democratic National Convention, the Tet Offensive, Robert F. Kennedy being assassinated, Martin Luther King being assassinated, body bags coming home from Vietnam every day. It was one of the most chaotic times of my life. Mm-hmm. And then you had later, you had four dead in Ohio. And mm-hmm. you remember that because of the song.
Right.
You remember Vietnam because of Fortunate Son. You remember mm-hmm. the songs that stuck with you ingrained mm-hmm. these things into your mind. And they were catchy. And we had a counterculture that was vibrant.
Yeah.
And it was spearheaded by, you know, the Beatles came over in 64 after Kennedy died, and people were going, God bless, a relief from what we're going through. And then they and the rest of the 60s branched out into freedom of expression and supporting a counterculture movement that helped us overthrow Richard Nixon. And Nixon, when he came into office, even the Republicans stood up against him. And by God, there mm-hmm. were songs about that. And this is what I think we need, a larger cultural unity mm-hmm. in order to, for my hope to spread and to be more than nascent. I do have hope because, look, I've got children and grandchildren. I've got two grandkids. One's 5 years old, just start and living in Texas, of all places, and just starting school. I want him to have to look forward to a future better than ours. But mm-hmm. there are kids today that are, you know, when you and I came up, right, it was always, we're going to leave you something better. You could start a family. You could own a home. There are kids in their 20s and 30s today that can't live outside. They can't afford housing. They get paid bupkis, and they're still living with their parents. And this has destroyed our culture. And part of it is a lack of cultural identity and cohesiveness. When you had Sly and the Family Stone saying, I'm everyday people, mm-hmm. man, it was black, white, brown, green, gay, straight, purple people eaters, everybody, man, could relate to that. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing like that on the cultural horizon today. So if, you know, and since this is not a hopeless plug for rock and roll since I play in a band, but I will say that I would love to see that type of unity culturally,
yeah.
because that would, I think, would bode well for the future of politics.
But don't you think part of the reason there isn't something like that? I mean, of course, it wouldn't be the only reason, but we've got this legacy media that's not really reporting the news accurately. And they're, I mentioned,
not reporting the news at all.
Yeah.
Let's be honest with you. We don't report news anymore. We promote opinions.
Right.
And it bugs me to no end. Look, I have an opinion. I had reporters work for me. I've run newsrooms. I've had reporters come up to me and I want to write a column. This is my opinion. I go, hey, you've been on the job an hour. How about you get like 10 or 20 years experience and then I might listen to you.
Right.
Right now, go out and do the job and cover the news. I've had reporters come to me and go, this is what I think. And I go, I don't care what you think. I barely care what I think. What do you know? Give me the facts, vetted, factual information. That is, in truth, one of the reasons, one of the cornerstones to a democracy that I talked about earlier. Less money in politics, more education, and an independent media. And we don't have that today. You have a half a dozen companies that own 95% of what you see, read, or hear nationally. There is no local media anymore. That 45% of the counties, and I mean, this is not me guessing. This is a study, I think, at McGill that was spearheaded by Paul Ferry from the Washington Post, who did a study that showed that 45% of the counties, and I repeat it, 45% of the counties in the United States of America do not have a community media presence. There is no local media. And in those counties, and this is where it's important, Donald Trump won 91% of those counties in the last election, many of those by landslide. So that's why you need local community press. And we don't have it. We don't have support for it at any level in government, local, state, or national. We have slap suits, strategic lawsuits against public participation. The greatest example of that is Donald Trump suing Paramount and, and CBS for something he knew he could never win in court, but because it was so expensive for them and Sherry Redstone was trying to get rid of Paramount and needed government approval to do it, he used it as leverage to get CBS to bend the knee to him. You have to have substantial penalties for those strategic lawsuits against public participation. You have to break up media monopolies, and you have to invest in local media. People say that newspapers are dead. They're right, because government killed them. People still value newspapers and community newspapers. Why? Because the simple fact is, I can hold up a newspaper from 18. I testified in Congress, held up a newspaper that was published in 1855. I said, this is finite. In a court of law, this rules. You can't hack it. You can't change it.
Right.
It exists as it existed when it was first published. The internet is ephemeral. Anybody can go in and change it, and you don't know what facts are. These are facts. And I would pull out a copy of a newspaper that went back to when Abraham Lincoln was assassinated, and I would read it, and people would go, wow, that's, I didn't know that. And I'm going, yes, and here it is printed on that day.
Yeah.
So, yes, you need newspapers, you need the press, you need to break up media monopolies, and that's I could go on that rant for a while.
Well, and I think that that's partly why we don't see, you know, more in rock and roll or more. I mean, we are seeing some rock and rollers standing up, but not in the way that you just described with all the songs and the poetry, really, because songs are just poetry. And we're not seeing that. I mean, you can also talk about AI and social media rot and all of that. But yeah, I think part of it is because there's no one news source that everybody can count on.
There's and no Walter Cronkite out there, I'll tell
you
that.
No, there isn't. And that's just, it's really, I mean, every day I go back and forth. Greg Oliar was saying this the last time he was on my show, and I said it during the first term, like every day, I just think, I can't believe what's happening. I can't believe what's happening. And so, you know, I'm trying to take the positive. I mean, I can too, but it's like, meaning from when I was growing up, I never thought this was going to happen to our country. I lived in Soviet Russia when I was 12, because my dad worked for ABC News. And so I had the opportunity to see what it's like to live in a police state. And I never thought we were going to see it here, because that's when I understood the word patriot. You know, it's like, oh, okay, I'm a patriot, because this being in the Soviet Union is very different than living in America. And yeah, it's just so upsetting. And I am hopeful. But as you mentioned, it would be easier to be more hopeful if we saw better media, if we saw just different ways of, if we saw Democrats. And I hope that Gavin Newsom.
Educated.
Yes.
Media.
Educated. Yes.
Look, when I first walked into the White House press briefing room, it was in 1985, I think it was. So it was 40 years ago. First person I met was Helen Thomas. Mm-hmm. She knew who I was. And I was nobody. But she knew everything and everyone. Mm-hmm. And she walked in, she introduced me to Sam Donaldson. I followed them around and I learned from them. Now, Donaldson said something to me I'll never forget. I was standing there in the Brady briefing room. He said, Brian, you look at that first row in the Brady briefing room, that first row of reporters. There is more than 200 years of experience there. Learn from each and every one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, then he looked over and said, and Helen's got 195 years of that experience. He turned around and looked at him and said something smart. And Sam, hey, Helen, it's okay to have an unexpressed thought. And she said, Sam, when it comes to you, I have a lot of unexpressed thoughts. And I didn't know where I was going to be the rest of my life. But that moment, I'll never forget, it was golden. But he was absolutely right.
Yeah.
Look, you look at the Brady briefing room today. That first row in there, not even approaching 200 years of experience. Half of that, if you're lucky.
There are reporters who get straight out of school, get a master's degree, a wasteful one, and if you ask me. But yeah, okay, fine. You want to be super educated with a master's degree, fine. But you still have to learn how to work a beat.
Yeah.
You can't do that, you know, fresh off the choo-choo out of school and walking into the Brady briefing room. You can't. You need to have the experience to know how to get information, how to fight against people who don't give you information, how to get around them. You have to develop sources. You have to know how to do that. And all of that takes experience that you don't get in a classroom.
Yeah.
You get it by on-the-job training. Thus, when I first got to that, you know, walked into the White House, to be in the pool, to be have that hard pass, to be covering the White House every day, you had to have 10 to 15 years of experience.
Yeah.
We don't have that.
No, we don't have that at all.
And that you have kids fresh off the choo-choo. They become enamored of the fact they think they're part of the in crowd, baby. Ooh, I'm so close to power. And they play access journalism. I need to get my access or I can't get my stories. Well, you're not getting any stories even if you have access. You might get a viral moment. You might get a you know, a bone tossed at you. Mm-hmm. Here you go, pal. Hey, Melania just posed for a, you know, a cover of, you know, Atlantic. Look, I'm giving you the tip. You've got the exclusive. Well, big deal.
Right.
That's not a story. That covering the president has become appearance versus reality, and people putting their, you know, their names on articles that I would not want to report on. I'm sorry. It's not the same. You have to have experience to cover one of the most powerful people on the planet.
All right, let's switch. Let's switch over. I wanted to ask you about the military occupation in DC. So do you feel that this is in perpetuity? Do you think it's temporary? Where does this go? What happens now? Is it just going to spread across the United States and everybody? Is we're going to have a big old police state?
Well, Donald Trump would love that to happen.
Yeah.
He's already said that several Democratic large cities are dystopian.
Yeah.
Which is a crock of crap. But, I mean, he said that, you know, Washington, D.C., I mean, the words he used to describe Washington, D.C., like, you know, maniacs, drug-crazed lunatics, you know, gangs roving the streets. Pal, what Mad Max movie did you see? Because I've been in D.C. late at night, and even when the vampires from frickin' Georgetown roam the streets, it's not as dangerous as your average Friday night high school football game is in Rockville, Maryland.
Yeah.
So, I mean, give me a break. It's a flat out lie, but he's using it, and he's using it to take control. More importantly, Jim, let's be honest. The reason why all of this is making waves and making headlines, it keeps you from talking about the thing he just doesn't want to talk about. The two words that will make Donald Trump crap his pants in a heartbeat. And those two words are Jeff Epstein.
Yeah, I was just going to get to that.
So that's what it is. But yes, is there a danger of takeover? Yeah. Tonight, Donald Trump says he's going to take a ride along with DC police to see how bad things are. That was the breaking news before we started today. It's hilarious to me that he's going to take a ride along. I did that as a 23-year-old reporter. He said in an interview he intends to join law enforcement on the streets of Washington, D.C. Thursday evening, inviting more disaster.
Exactly.
I'm going to be out tonight, I think, with the police and with the military, of course, the president told radio host Todd Starnes, who I've never heard of. Senior White House official said the details of the evening are still being worked out. Yeah. The detail, Donald Trump walking the streets of D.C., hell, he can barely walk the rope line. So what's he going to do, sit in a Humvee, garden?
Cheeseburgers.
Do you realize the security that's going to have to be? Right now, the Secret Service is crapping themselves, trying to figure out how to protect this moron who is, well, for all intents and purposes, a strong-arm, tin-pot dictator, a despot the likes of the United States has never seen.
Okay, so this is the last thing that we're going to talk about. As far as Epstein, I'm going to just give you my opinion, and then I don't, you know, we could talk about whatever follows. But so, you know, everybody's calling for the release of the list. And my personal opinion here is I don't want them to release the list because I don't believe that it's going to be accurate. I don't think they're going to tell us the truth. Maybe they might. You know, I think there was a viral tweet or post, I should say, by Keith Edwards that said something like, if they release the list, they're going to throw a bunch of Democrats out there, maybe a few Republicans, and maybe an oligarch or two. And that's absolutely what I think that they would do. I wouldn't trust it at all. And, you know, if Ghislaine Maxwell gets a pardon and they don't release the list, I actually think it's better that way, because all of the obsession about Epstein really started in the QAnon world. And so if, like, my fear is that they release a partial bogus list and then the QAnon crowd is satisfied and then it goes away.
Now, I've spoken to the QAnon crowd, and okay. I have a take on it. I want the list. First of all, I always err on the side of more information is better than less information, so I want it. But here's a couple of things to keep in mind. First of all, the Supreme Court, I'm sorry, the court proceedings and the stuff that came from the grand jury that won't be released.
Mm-hmm.
Donald Trump is trying to paint that as the be-all and end-all. And as one of the judges came out and said, look, this is contrary to what you say that you want to release, so you're full of it, A, and B, there's only one FBI agent on there, so no, I'm not releasing this stuff. Go to hell. So Donald, we've already seen that he's being disingenuous, but here's the thing. QAnon, the far left, the far right, the middle, I would never have picked this issue as a unifying force in
right.
American politics. Who in the right mind would have? I mean, this mm-hmm. is not... I mean, Jeff Epstein as a unifier?
Come right. on.
No prognosticator would pick that, no matter how well you... No prognostication. I mean, look, here's what I wrote. I'll back this up. There are extremely low number of prognosticators who can accurately predict the outcome of a WWE match, not knowing the participants or anything about the sport. The same can be said of political pundits and their ability to discern in advance what will unite the American electorate.
Right.
They have years of experience doing it. Not many of us had Jeffrey Epstein or Ghislaine Maxwell on our bingo cards, you know, to mix metaphors while gilding the lily. Certainly professional pundits, unless they were buried in Adderall and mainlining caffeine and battery acid, would ever even picture it. But here we are. This is the one issue on which many Americans agree. And the QAnon people will not be happy with whatever is released, because they will say, you didn't release it all. Where's the rest of it?
Okay.
Once you're a conspiracy theorist, you're in.
Okay. Well, that makes me feel better.
What's funny is listening to people, the far right goes, I want all of this released because that I know Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama mm-hmm. and back in the back of a sub shop, there were kiddie porn and kiddie pedophilia. We know what was going on. So that's going to release, and that's going to be there. And they're going to say, hey, you've hidden it. Now, the people on the left are going to say, look, Donald Trump was involved. You know, all the Republicans were involved, and whatever we released, that's not going to benefit them. Mm. At the end of the day, they're both saying the same thing. Let the chips fall where they may, release the information, and let the American people know. And that's a good thing. And at the end of the day, it's also about holding people accountable. And this is the one issue where both of them agree that oligarchs and rich people should not get away mm-hmm. with what? Trafficking young. And I hate when they say trafficking, you know, underage women.
Yeah.
Those are called children.
Children.
That's,
yes.
That's children.
Yes.
You're trafficking girls.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. That pisses people off. Thankfully, there's something that we all agree on. That you know, there's a line in the sand that won't erase. So God bless America for, you know, and Donald Trump stepped into, this is a debacle of his own making. And this is why I think he's lost his mind. He came out and he said that an underaged girl who worked in the spa.
Yeah.
At Mar-a-Lago was quote unquote stolen by Jeffrey Epstein.
Mm-hmm.
Not that she got a new job.
Right.
Not that she had a resume and she got better pay, but that he stole her, indicating that she was nothing more than property to both men. And
right.
That's repugnant, and people on both sides of the political aisle recognize it for that fact. So no matter what their
motives are for wanting it released. I applaud the effort to get the information released, and we should hound him into the depths of hell where he should reside, along with his, you know, his paramour, Satan. Thank you, South Park. until we get that information.
Okay, so what about, you know, Allison Gill put out a call to those, like, 1,000 FBI people who were going over the list, right? And they were, like, getting Donald Trump out of the list or whatever. So some of the stuff she said, there was, like, real panic going on, and people were freaking out, and they were feeling a lot of pressure. So there was, like, 1,000 people who went through that list, and that was just recently. So prior to that, I mean, and I don't know what I'm talking about here. Maybe you know more than I do, and you probably do. But a lot of people have seen that list. A lot of people are aware of that list. I don't know who they are, but there are people out there who know that full list. You know, I mean, what do you think the chances, like, if they put out a partial list? I mean, aren't we used to seeing whistleblowers, you know, just, I mean, are people afraid to whistleblow this? What's the deal? People know.
I think it's a complicated issue. First of all, the DOJ has had, as the judge in New York pointed out in the Ghislaine Maxwell case, the government has, DOJ has far more information in their possession than that judge does. You know, just the one FBI member testifying. Donald Trump never testified before a grand jury, so that's a moot point. If there were prosecutable information, we have had Democrat and Republican presidents who did nothing with it. So either they were cahooting. I love that word, cahooting.
Thank you for the whole nine yards for introducing that into the lexicon. Were you cahooting? Yeah, we were cahooting. They were in cahoots together, or there's nothing there. Now, right. I don't know which it is. I suspect that there is some information there. Let's be honest. Who could have prosecuted this in Florida at the time it first came up? That would be Pam Bondi. What happened to the lawyer that was he got promoted in Donald Trump's administration, you know, from being Donald Trump's personal lawyer. All of them have made out like a bandit. Let's be honest about who Pam Bondi is. It's not of consequence to me that she was bought and paid for Donald Trump. And to refresh everyone's memory, she was investigating Trump University for fraud and tax evasion. And right up into the point, and she was going to be involved in a suit against Donald Trump, right up into the point where he donated $25,000 to her campaign reelection fund. And after that, she bowed out. Now, it's not surprising that she was bought by Donald Trump, but it sure is surprising to me how cheap a whore she is.
Yeah.
That $25,000 on an annual, that's not even as much as an Uber driver made.
I know, it's nothing.
She's an Uber driver for the Donald Trump administration. Thank you, Pam Bondi, who has set back women's rights 50 years with her moronic attitude, because she is stupid and she is opportunistic. And she has sold what little soul she had to the minion of Satan. So I don't know if there's anything there. I suspect that there is. But more importantly, it's the innuendo. There may be nothing provable there, but there sure is guilt by association. And
right.
We know that Donald Trump has said that he was friends with, you know, him for Epstein for 15 years. He flew on the plane. All of this is documented. We heard him say, grab him by the pussy. We heard him that he walked into, you know, he walked into swimsuit competitions for events that he
like
owned.
Teens, teen girls.
Yes. And watched teen girls get dressed. We know Donald Trump. We know who and what he is. He doesn't want anyone reminding people of that. And he's scared to death that something will come out. You do not act the way Donald Trump is acting about Epstein unless you had something to hide. And Ghislaine Maxwell is the linchpin to that. And today she's in low risk housing and getting work release because she spoke with Donnie.
Wow. All right. Well, I said that was the last question, but it's kind of not. Because the other quick little question I have is, when we were at the Sexy Liberal thing, you talked to my boyfriend, Bob Suska, for a documentary. So I want to hear a little bit about that and like when is it going to be released?
Well, the documentary we just got actually last night just finished the rough cut. It's got to be sweetened with music and some sound and a few video changes, but that's scheduled to go out in the next couple of weeks. Once we get it done, it'll be released, I think, through Midas Touch, YouTube, maybe Netflix. We're still working.
Oh,
with
that would
them.
Be cool.
Yeah, we're trying to get that. It'll probably be on Amazon Prime, where my last one was. So we're trying to set it up for multiple ways of release, multiple streaming ways of releasing it. And Bob had one of the
greatest moments in that interview. And we interviewed everybody in the Sexy Liberal Comedy Tour. And everyone had Stephanie Miller had a great moment.
Hal
Olivia
Sparks.
Troy did. John Fugelsang did. Hal Sparks did. But the one that I liked from Bob was, it was pretty funny. He said, I predict the first one to be kicked out of this administration will be Elon Musk, and he'll be the first one with a funny nickname. And damn if he didn't nail that.
That was a fun and interesting night. The thing that sucked, though, was afterward, during the meet and greet, because the inauguration was, I think, the following day.
Yes.
Everything in D.C. was like shutting down, and where Bob and I were parked, they were like, okay, we're going to close this garage, and we had to dash. So we didn't have a lot of time to visit, and we felt
that.
Really bad. Yeah, it was irritating.
They were closing everything down, and I had the crew with me. So they're closing everything down. We've got two vehicles, freaking three cameras, a crew of about half a dozen people, in the crew, plus myself and the director for the documentary. And we're going through trying to get quickly everything. And we couldn't get any of that meet and greet afterwards because we had to bolt. So that was a sad part. No, the saddest part was the day after the actual inauguration.
Yeah.
And it was watching people. There's one guy singing, Santa Trump is coming to town.
Oh God.
And he pointed at, and this is in the documentary. He pointed at some of the buildings and he says, this is Washington DC folks. 90% of the people here are Democrats. They have no soul. They're dead inside. Don't even bother with them. Hate them. And I'm going, Jesus,
God.
Well, thank you for that Christian moment.
Right, exactly.
And then I'm sitting there interviewing a pastor, and I channeled my inner John Fugelsang at that point and started asking him questions about why he thought Donald Trump was a Christian and supported the Bible. And his answers were just hilariously ignorant. And every time he made a point about Donald, we counterpointed with some of the stuff that, and I did, I just asked him questions because I'm not going to confront a guy and browbeat him over his ignorance. But in the documentary, we pointed out with video, every time he said Donald Trump was a Christian, well, then we show the E. Jean Carroll stuff.
And right.
Every time he said about he loved kids, well, then we showed the Epstein stuff.
Right.
But every time he said he respected women, we showed the Access Hollywood, grab him by the pussy stuff. So that to me was just an example of how blind the so-called Christians are to Donald Trump. And he, let's face it, that those are people, the reason why he got elected, one of the big reasons.
Do you know the name of this documentary yet? Have you put a name on it?
We were going to call it Trump the First 100 Days, but I have used stuff. I've re-edited this thing at least three or four times because every time I think Donald Trump can't do anything more ridiculous, he proves me wrong. So now it's just Trump 2, the revenge.
Awesome. Well, I'm looking forward to it. And you're going to have to let me know. I mean, I'll see it because
I'll make sure you get a copy and you can see it. And I'll be promoting it. So you can have me back and we'll promote that.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. All right, Brian. Well, I always love talking to you. You're one of my favorites. So like I ask every guest, tell everybody where to find you, wherever you want them to find you.
Let's see. You can find me on every week on salon.com with my weekly column. Maybe twice a week sometimes. Also, the podcast is called Just Ask the Question, now in its seventh year. And, of course, the book is called Free the Press.
In its third edition, wherever fine books are sold. And finally, you can catch me on Substack at Brian Karam Reporter's Notebook. So that's my stamp in the world of media these days.
Awesome. And then, of course, you're also on all the other socials. So
yes,
it's just Brian Karam.
Sometimes Brian Karam.
Or sometimes you have Brian J. Karam. And I know this because I'm MSW social media and I have to, you know, tag you and everything. So, but awesome, awesome conversation. Thanks again for being on. And, you know, we'll talk soon.
Anytime.
Frances Callier.
And I'm Angela V. Shelton.
And we're Frangela.
You know what you need in your life? The Final Word podcast.
Yes, you do.
That's right. It is the final word on all things political and pop cultural.
Where we make real news real funny.
Where we inspire you so you can hashtag resist.
Subscribe and get a new episode of the Final Word podcast each week. It's the news we think you need to hear.
That's right. We think you need to hear it. Okay.
Yeah, it's what we say so.
That's right. And because all we do is give, every Thursday you can listen to our hysterical podcast, Idiot of the Week.
We round up the stupid because you know what? Somebody has to.
Okay. All we do is give.
It's no surprise that newsmakers try to manipulate the audience. They want you to believe that they are the one holding the line and they'll use any trick they can to get you there. But don't let them fool you. Get unspun. I'm Amanda Sturgill. I've been a reporter, and today I teach future reporters to cut the spin and think critically about what newsmakers say. My podcast, Unspun, shows you how to know when you're being manipulated by the news. Learn to spot the tricks and how to make up your own mind about what's true. So if you're tired of being fooled by the news, subscribe to Unspun today. Unspun. Because you deserve the truth.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.